of movies with Gordon Hayden. Spin
103.8. Now on the show, Brian and Rory, they're going to take a look back at some of the best films this year. Rory, we're going to start with Spotlight. And I know some people might think, what, why are you going back now to the Oscar winner? Because some people might also feel that. Does the new movies of 2016, does that really kick off after the big movie award ceremonies like the Academy Awards?
Sure.
But look, for all intents and purposes, this time out, we're going to consider these films as part of the cabal of flicks.
Yeah, because it was within the calendar year of January to December 2016. So I think it's only fair. It was released in January. It was an amazing film. It wasn't on our best of 2015 list, so it has to get mentioned somewhere. And it was properly brilliant. It was, as I'm sure Brian will agree, it was like throwing us back to the old school, All the President's Men, kind of intelligent dramas with an amazing cast, so brilliantly written, so brilliantly directed, and really stands up to repeat viewing. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's one of the very few films, I think I said this when we reviewed it the first time out. I remember going to we were at the press screening for that in the Lighthouse. I remember that when it does like the epilogue thing and it shows like all the other places where a similar kind of situation happened, like there was a stony, like there was just like, it was like dead silent. And like people were sitting in their seats for about 5 minutes after the film ended. Like, that never happens. Well, I mean, it doesn't happen for this kind of a film, you know, that kind of way.
Oh, yeah, the effect that what happened and what was uncovered by the Boston Globe. It was incredible work by their journalists. I want to play you a clip from the film. This is a very powerful scene where Mark Ruffalo is confronting his editor, who's played by Michael Keaton, about why it's so important that they need to move on this story right now. They've got this information to hand. Let's not sit in it. Let's just go for it. This is a very powerful scene.
We got law. This is it.
No, this is law covering for one priest. There's another 90 out there.
Yeah, and we'll print that story when we get it, but we got to go with this now.
No, I'm not going to rush the story, Mike.
But we don't have a choice, Robbie. If we don't rush to print, somebody else is going to find these letters and butcher this story. Joe Quimby from the Herald was at the freaking courthouse.
Mike.
What? Why are we hesitating? Barron told us to get law. This is law.
Barron told us to get the system. We need the full scope. That's the only thing that will put an end to this.
Then let's take it up to Ben. Let him decide.
We'll take it to Ben when I say it's time.
It's time, Robbie. It's time. They knew, and they let it happen. Two kids. Okay? It could have been you. It could have been me. It could have been any of us. We gotta nail these scumbags. We gotta show people that nobody can get away with this. Not a priest or a cardinal or a freaking pope.
Next up on our We Love Movies Best Films of the Year list is The Revenant. Before we hear what Rory and Brian thought of it, here is Leonardo DiCaprio along with his director Alejandro Iñárritu.
Give it your best go.
It's a bit of a tongue twister. Anyway, here's what they had to say about the making of the film. Donald Gleeson, you'll hear his voice in this too.
A lot of people have never seen this time period in American history on film.
20 years before, Lewis and Clark has crossed the continent with nobody else. It was an uncharted territory.
This Northwest Territory was inhabited by indigenous people, the French and the English. It wasn't really America yet. Very little laws and rules. It became a place of great interest to in the fur trapping trade. Ultimately, it was a source of massive income, kind of like the pre-gold rush in a lot of ways.
Tell me you got some kind of plan.
We have a group of us, the fur trappers. It's this crazy hodgepodge of people from all over the place.
I've been out here so long, I'm actually starting to miss my wife's cooking.
I'm actually starting to miss your wife.
You shut the hell up.
We had a conversation, all of the cast and Alejandro.
The theme of the film is survival and spiritual growth through physical pain.
He said you're going to be in pain, and that's planned, and that he wanted to film that then.
You're forgetting your place, boy. As far as I can tell, my place is right here on the smart end of this rifle.
Brian, if I can start with you on all things The Revenant. I thought it was a very well-made film. Would I want to watch it again? I wouldn't be rushing to. I think it's one of those films that I admire it more for its the technical skills and the fact that there's some great performances in there. But it left me a bit cold, like Leonardo in the film.
I think that's the point. Like, I mean, it's one of the very few films I've watched where I could actually feel the cold coming out of the screen. You know, that kind of way. Like, I mean, like, that is the thing that Inarritu was very good at is that he can really kind of put you in the middle of it. Like, it was the same with Birdman as well. Like, the whole thing that it was all done in one take, it looked like you were actually following from behind, and it's the same with The Revenant as well. But yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, I haven't watched it since I saw it at the press screen and around this time last year. Like, and I've no desire to watch it again. Do you know that kind of way? Whereas with Spotlight, for example, it was like, crap, I have to see this again. I've got to show this to other people. They've got to see this. Like, whereas Revenant, like, absolutely, a very good technical exercise. It looked really well. Leonardo DiCaprio, he definitely deserved the Oscar for it, but I wouldn't be, same as yourself, I wouldn't be rushing out to go see it again.
Rory, yeah, and Brian are pretty much in the same camp. Where would you be, Rory, on The Revenant?
Yeah, no, I have watched it again on the small screen. It didn't have the same kind of wow factor it did when I seen it the first time, obviously, because it's the same like Gravity or one of those really impressive technical films where you are blown away by the visuals, and when it's put down and shrunk down, you're like, oh, now I see why I found it a little bit dragged out.
But you know what tends to happen with a lot of Oscar films? I don't know if you feel this as well, as that before they hit our shores, there's this almost inbuilt acclaim.
Mm.
There were certain critics that were falling over themselves with The Revenant. You think, are you kind of falling over yourself more so because of what people are saying, say, the stateside?
Yeah, no, I think that definitely does happen. We've seen, like, critics who get caught up in the furore, and there's critics who are like racing to get their quote put on a poster because then they can join the ranks of everyone else who has their quotes on the poster. But yeah, like, it is just a case of it was a fantastic made film. It does have great performances. It was unique in the story it was telling as well. But yeah, it doesn't lend itself to repeat viewing because it's just not a very, it's very well made. It is actually is a great film. It's just not very entertaining, I think it's the problem.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Then let's move on to the only animated film, believe it or not, we're going to discuss in our best movies of 2016 list, and that is Zootropolis. Brian, when Rory reviewed this, he loved it. He'd seen it twice. It was one of those movies that I think he was even said, Rory, it'd be a great date movie. Mm. What was your reaction to it, Brian, when you saw it?
Yeah, I was really, really, really pleasantly surprised. Like, I was going into it thinking, God, I don't know how they can make this, you know, how is this going to work? Like, because it looked kind of
basic.
I don't want to say cheap. Yeah, like, it looked a bit cheap, and it looked a bit kind of like almost like a DreamWorks film from about 5 years ago, you know, that kind of way. But no, it really, like, it had so many like cool references. Like, it was almost like Chinatown if it was done by Pixar, but with talking animals and stuff like that. And then there was so much to like about it, like, and even just the voice acting as well, like Jason Bateman was a completely, like, I never would have considered him I wouldn't have thought his shtick, like, his kind of comedic, you know, versatility or timing or whatever I want to call it, I never would have thought that would have translated over into animated, but it completely did.
Mm-hmm.
And J.K. Simmons as well was brilliant in it, as well as the mayor. So yeah, it was great little film.
I love J.K. Simmons in this as Lionheart,
yeah,
the mayor,
yeah,
as he says himself, full of bluster. Actually, I want to play you a little soundbite of J.K. and also here's a little clip as well from the film.
Sir, if we could just review these very important... Oh, sir! I'm so sorry. Sir!
Okay, I heard you, Bellwether. Just take care of it. Please, and clear my afternoon. I'm going out.
Oh, no, but sir, you do have a meeting with herds and grazing. Sir, if I could just...
I play Mayor Leodore Lionheart, who is, as the astute listener might guess, a lion. A lion-hearted lion. He's the mayor of Zootopia. And I always felt like there was a little bit of Mayor Shin from The Music Man in him. He's a little bit of a blowhard. There's some bluster there, as sometimes is the case with mayors, political figures, you know, likes to hear his own voice.
We're now going to move on to the blockbuster side of things, Rory. This film is the most successful film of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
It is a Marvel entry, believe it or not. This film came out in April, end of April, where the summer season tends to start now. This is, of course,
March was this year, because Batman came out in March.
Was that March? Yeah, I forgot about that. But that film didn't do as well as this one.
Didn't.
This is, of course, Captain America Civil War, third Captain America movie, but pretty much Avengers 2.5.
Yes, this was the one where, looking back on it, I found that upon repeat viewings was better than when I watched it the first time. Because the first time I went in with, like, massive expectations, because Brian will back me up on this, The Winter Soldier is arguably the best Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And I was going, I was like, right, we're back. We've got the Russos are back and Captain America and, ooh, and Iron Man's in this and great. And then when I watched it, I was like, oh, it is kind of just like the Avengers again, but like more Ultron and not the first one. So we're just kind of like, ugh. But watched it again and it is actually smarter than I remembered, funnier than I remembered. The action stuff, the problem is all the best action stuff went to the supporting cast. You've got Ant-Man and Spider-Man. And the film should have essentially been Captain America versus Iron Man, but there's no, it's like even with their end fight, it doesn't build up the same way you would have likened it to.
Yes,
but you know, the cast is great. Everyone is like really, really filling in their roles perfectly now, and it didn't feel like Ultron where it was just the wheels turning until we get to the next story. It did feel like it was actually progressing. Whole kind of MCU timeline.
And I thoroughly enjoyed everything about it, and it didn't get too bogged down in a big problem I have with Marvel movies, which is the third act where they throw everything at the screen to the point where you become numb by the experience. And I thought it was a major step up from Age of Ultron. Major. And I love Joss Whedon, but dare I say I found Age of Ultron a bit messy.
I think Ultron suffered from being rushed. I feel like that film could have done with another couple of months on the script and another couple of months on the edit and another couple of months with an idea to do for the third act. But with this, it felt like they knew what they were doing going in. Yeah. And it was great that they introduced a lot of new people. You never once felt like I'm drowning. Yeah. Because even with Spider-Man and even with the Black Panther, you were never like, this is too much.
Yeah, very true, actually. It all was a great marriage of all of those characters, bearing in mind there's so many of them. Let's just take a clip from Captain America Civil War.
Tony, if someone dies on your watch, you don't give up.
Who said we're giving up?
We are for not taking responsibility for our actions. This document just shifts the blame.
I'm sorry, Steve, that is dangerously arrogant. This is the United Nations we're talking about. It's not the World Security Council. It's not S.H.I.E.L.D. It's not HYDRA.
No, but it's run by people with agendas, and agendas change.
That's good.
That's why I'm here. When I realized what my weapons were capable of in the wrong hands, I shut it down, stopped manufacturing.
Tony, you chose to do that. If we sign this, we surrender our right to choose. What if this panel sends us somewhere we don't think we should go? What if there's somewhere we need to go and they don't let us? We may not be perfect, but the safest hands are still our own.
If we don't do this now, it's going to be done to us later.
A clip there from Civil War. We're going to shake things up now. The next couple of movies very much have their roots in the Western. Before we get Brian's thoughts on this particular film, let's just take a little section from Hell or High Water, which is like a modern day type of Western. This particular sequence features Ben Foster, Chris Pine. They've robbed a bank. They're making their getaway and the law is in hot pursuit.
Put the gun on the counter. You trying to get us killed?
I ain't stealing from some old man. We steal from one place. That's it.
You're turning out to be a poor ass criminal. See what the early bird gets? Maybe we should hit that bridge, Jayden.
No, we ain't. We hit those banks first thing in the morning. When they're empty. It's the last time I kind of get shot at. You gotta be smart. We're ways from being finished.
I can do this all week.
We're gonna.
We're like the Comanches, little brother. Raiding where we please, with the whole of Texas hunting our shadow.
Brian, you loved and adored Hell or High Water. For those that may have missed your review the first time out, why did it really appeal to you?
I think it was the idea of a simple story, but it having so much more into it, like, you know, that kind of way. Like, I mean, as you said yourself, like, it is literally just about two brothers trying to rob enough banks so that they can raise money to buy back the farm that's been about to be foreclosed upon. But what really Hell or High Water is about, I mean, in a larger kind of sense, is how basically America is dying. That, you know, people are having their land taken off and from massive corporations, and that this is a recurring theme in America. Mm-hmm. Like, there's Jeff Bridges plays this Texas Ranger in it, and he's got this buddy with him called Gil Birmingham is his name, and he's a Native American. And it's just like this small little 5-minute scene where they're standing outside this bank. And he turns to him and says, this has been happening for years. Like, as in, my land was taken off you by you people. Now your land has been taken off you by those people. And he points to the bank. And that's literally the entire film. In the space of 5 minutes, that's the message of the film, that America will just drive people off the land because they shouldn't be there, you know?
Hell or High Water, it's written by the same screenwriter as Sicario, but there's almost a bit of a Cormac McCarthy vibe off it. I don't know if you picked up on
completely.
That.
Oh, Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it is like, if you didn't realize it was by your man Taylor Sheridan, you would think this was like a sequel to No Country for Old Men or something like that. And the interesting thing is the director as well, David McKenzie, like, he's an Englishman, like, you know, that kind of way. Like, he's not like he has any kind of connection to the West or anything like that or to America. Like, he's an English director. But he completely got the tone right, completely got the visuals right. And, I mean, Chris Pine, who, you know, I would have not rated him as an actor before this, was fantastic in it. And, I mean, it's been mentioned as a dark horse for Best Picture. And I wouldn't be surprised if it got nominated. I would expect it to get nominated. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if it even won.
I remember you actually saying that before, Brian, when we were looking ahead to potential Oscar nominees, and you were saying, you know what, keep an eye out for Hell or High Water. That could be in there with a major shout. Now let's move on to another type of Western, Rory, a horror Western.
Yeah.
This film stars Kurt Russell. It's got a great cast in this all round. But Bone Tomahawk, it was almost like if you take the Western, but then meld it with The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah, and I think I knew very little about it going in. It's probably the least seen film that we're going to talk about today. And if you haven't seen it, by God, seek it out.
It's on Netflix.
Oh, is it on Netflix?
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, yeah.
Great show. Absolutely check it out.
But it's like one of those movies, wouldn't it, that you'd nearly see late at night.
Yeah, and it totally sneaks up on you because, you know, the basic plot is, oh, they've got a posse and they're chasing after someone who's done something wrong. And then they just find themselves in the middle of this most intense and crazy violent horror film, and the moment it starts, like, it's you slowly creeping up, and you're like, okay, this is no longer just the Western I thought it was. It's actually getting a little bit unsettling, and then it just snowballs out of control, and the last hour is just pure terror, and it's so well done. Absolutely brilliant.
Well, if anyone's listening going, what actually is going on? Because the local doctor, she has been abducted.
Mm.
And you find out that she's been abducted by these Native Americans.
Troglodytes, they're called.
They're called troglodytes. That's, yeah, exactly. Word. And so they have literally gone off the range altogether.
Yeah.
And they're living in the hills. And so it takes this posse led by Kurt Russell. Patrick Wilson plays her husband, and he's got this bad injury. So if anything, he's more of a hindrance to them. Then we've got Matthew Fox in there from Lost Fame.
Yeah.
And then we have Richard Jenkins in there too. Great cast all around.
Amazing
anyway,
cast.
Here is the clip from the film. This is when they realise, look, okay, we know where these troglodytes are, and here's how we're going to have to go get them.
This empty area is a mountain range. Forbidden territory, has been for centuries. Somewhere in the northwestern part of it is a place my people call the Valley of the Starving Men. Troglodytes are said to live there.
That's days from here.
How many of them do you think there are?
It won't matter. You have no chance against any number of them.
I'm riding out with Mr. O'Dwyer because there isn't a choice for either of us. The rest of you can stay.
You'll be killed.
I'm coming with you.
No, I need you here. You need to keep an eye on
him. No, I'm coming. I'm coming. Nick's gone, and this is what the backup's for, to help an emergency, not stay back. I'm coming.
This is suicide.
I'll get back to meet you in front of the jail in 15 minutes.
As will I. I'm the one who fetched your wife and got her involved. Got a responsibility to you both. And I've killed more Indians than everyone here put together.
Well, it's an ugly boast.
It isn't a boast. But a fact.
We spoke about two Westerns. Now we're going to move on to probably the grittiest film of 2016, Green Room. Yeah. Rory, I'll let you take up the mantle on this one first. Patrick Stewart is in this, but by God, this is a role you've never seen Patrick Stewart undertake before.
No, this is about as far from Professor X as you can imagine. He is the head of a local chapter of neo-Nazis who is called in once a punk rock group witness a murder in his club, and he puts the whole thing into lockdown, and very softly spoken tells them everything's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we know it, them being neo-Nazis and having them done something terrible and it being witnessed. Per Antal Yelchin, per, what's her name, Imogen Poots?
Yes, she's in there too.
Imogen Poots, yeah.
And maybe from Arrested Development, like, you know, it's
Alia Shawcock.
Thank you. You know it's not going to end well for those poor peeps.
Well, here is a clip from the film. This is where they are essentially holed up in the green room, and there is a member of staff from this dodgy club in there with them. He's holding the gun. Is he going to turn on them, or will he end up having to partner up with them because those Nazis, they want to get in?
He's got 6 bullets.
For real?
We all go once?
Guys, hold off a sec.
For what?
We haven't done anything.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. They're called cartridges. The bullet is a part that enters your brain if you keep talking shit. And this gun only has 5 cartridges, not 6. Because they're big as fuck and only 5 fit the cylinder. So please, shut the fuck up. And don't test me.
You sure making it worse.
We sit and we wait.
And we die.
Not if you sit and you wait.
Brian, for those that haven't seen Green Room, just how gritty and nasty does it get?
Really, really, really nasty. Like, I mean, people are comparing it to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think that's a pretty apt comparison.
Yeah.
But it's not even, I mean, look, it is bloody and violent, but it's more about the atmosphere that it creates, in other kind of way. Like, it's really pressure cooker doesn't even begin to describe it. Like, I mean, it's just, you can see the panic in everyone's eyes. Like, I mean, Anton Yelchin, he was fantastic in this, and it's a real shame. I mean, I know he passed away this year, but like, looking at this, you were thinking he could really go on to do something really, really special. Alia Shawkat as well, she was fantastic. And Patrick Stewart, I mean, like Rory was saying, you have never seen him in a film like this before, in a role like this before, and he's terrifying in it.
Yeah, he really is. And as you mentioned as well, right, the way he just speaks so calmly. He's so unnerving. Now, next up, gentlemen, we're going to call this in our Best Movies of the Year section the Amy Adams Appreciation Corner, because she's got 2 films here, yeah. And the first of which is Arrival.
Another A.
Yeah, again. A lot of people love this, but then there's other people didn't really kind of connect with them. Brian, Arrival, for those that don't know, what's going on?
12 alien shells appear around Earth. And essentially, Amy Adams is a linguist who's sent in by the US government to try and make contact with her. She's joined by Jeremy Renner, who's a mathematics expert. Boris Whitaker is their sort of handler, if you like. But as they're trying to make contact with the aliens, the other shells around the planet are causing chaos, you know, that kind of way. Like, it's in Russia, they try to attack it. In Japan, you know, other stuff happens. In China, something else happens. All these kind of weird stuff happens. But at its core, I mean, it's the sort of, it asks like really, really big questions. Like, you'll come away from this film having some sort of like existentialist crisis, because there's a big thing in it about, you know, how time, you know, how do we view time? Because the aliens don't really view it the same way we view it. And it's set in flashback and then flash forward. And it's just, it's one of the strangest films I've seen. But I mean, one of the most rewarding films I've seen. You know, that kind of way. Like, it really does reward you for watching it and giving it full attention.
And I believe it has an ending, which obviously we're not going to spoil, that will have people talking and debating long time after. Yeah. Let's just take a little clip from Arrival.
I have something I need you to translate for me. Now you heard it. What do you make of it?
Is that?
Yes.
And the last film in our Best Films of 2016 here on We Love Movies is Nocturnal Animals, directed by Tom Ford, also wrote the screenplay. Man of many talents is Tom Ford. Interesting story going on here, Brian, because there's 3 stories all intertwined.
Yeah, it's about Jake Gyllenhaal and Amy Adams. The 2 of them were married, so one strain of the story is their relationship, how it formed, how it fell apart. Another, he wrote a book that was kind of based on their relationship, sort of, about a family that are out in the middle of Texas that are attacked by a group of vagrants, or
rednecks,
whatever you want to call them. Rednecks, fine, yeah, Grant, led by Aaron Taylor Johnson. And then a third story going through it is Amy Adams and how she's kind of dealing with the, you know, the reality of she destroyed her relationship with Jake Gyllenhaal and how her own relationship with Armie Hammer is falling apart as well.
Now, just to get back to the old rednecks, Rory, because rednecks. As Brian mentioned there, Aaron Taylor-Johnson plays the leader of those guys. I normally can't stand him as an actor. I find him really wooden. Actually, the best thing I think I've seen him in was Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
I thought he was quite good in that. But after that, he's been very, very...
bland.
Yeah, totally and utterly. But the clip we're going to play now in a second, he is terrifying in it.
Yeah, he really like went above and beyond. And I think it's because he was given something entirely different to do. Because normally he's relying on his pretty boy looks and doesn't have to try very hard in the likes of Godzilla or Ultron or anything else that we've really seen him in, especially the bigger stuff. And in this, he goes off the reservation when it comes to being the bad guy. Because the second you're introduced to him in the film, you're like, oh, that's a real bad, nasty energy coming off of him. And the more... you're in his company in the film, you're just dying for him to get his comeuppance because he's such a... He's proper villain, like. He's real bad. And, yeah, he really... like, everyone in this film went above and beyond in the performances, but I think because we're so used to him being... ugh, and then for him to be... ooh, was actually a nice surprise.
Yeah, he's like one of those actors where Hollywood has thought... he's a good-looking lad. He will be a movie star eventually, but what he's been put in just hasn't connected because he just hasn't got the charisma. But it seems like he's more of a maybe a character actor as opposed to leading man.
It was kind of the same thing that with Chris Pine. It gave him something a bit that we're not used to, a bit dirtier, a bit scruffier, a bit, absolutely not a good person. And put them with a good director, put them with a good screenplay, and it can actually work wonders.
Wham, bam.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, let's take a little clip of Aaron Taylor-Johnson in action in Nocturnal Animals.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You know you're supposed to stop when there's an accident, right?
Yeah, I know that.
And why didn't you stop then? That won't work. No signal here. You're not supposed to leave the scene of an accident. It's a crime.
After the way you were driving?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Just the way you were driving was crazy.
Hey, Turk!
Don't come any closer.
All right, sweetheart. It's all right.
You know what?
Right.
Please just get back in your car now.
Lady, calm down. We got an accident report. Hey, that's all.
Calm down. Wait, hey, lady. It's a flashlight, sweetheart. It's just a flashlight. It's all right.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, so let's exchange information.
Information?
Yeah.
Let's exchange information.
Right. We get out of the glove compartment, sweetheart.
Okay, I'm a Gemini. My favorite color is petal pink. I like long walks and kittens.
Clip there from Nocturnal Animals, wrapping up our best films of the year here on We Love Movies. We looked back at 2016's best and worst. Rory, looking ahead to next year now, what movie?
Blade Runner 2049, before you even ask the question.
Poor old Brian. Heartbroken man there.
And I know the trailer recently came out, the teaser trailer, and I know Brian wanted to say it first. And I know even you maybe wanted to say it first, Gordon, but I've said it first. Blade Runner 2049. Now you two have to
look at him. He's like the king of the castle
a
there.
Different answer.
Brian, we shall turn to you.
after Blade Runner 2049.
My pick. After
your
my pick, yeah, go on.
After your pick.
Uh-huh.
I would put in episode 8. I mean, Rian Johnson, I mean, look, we haven't seen anything in terms of a trailer, but I think Rogue One and Force Awakens were both very, very strong. Everything I'm hearing about episode 8 looks and sounds good. So, yeah, I mean, I'm a bit perplexed that we haven't seen a trailer yet, but I'm very, very much looking forward to it.
I think, you know what they thought? Maybe not, let's not, you know, skew things with Rogue One. Let that just do its
definitely.
Thing. Because there were people in the spin office thought Rogue One was episode 8.
To, yeah.
So I think very much what Disney are trying to do is almost have an A team and a B team. So all the saga films, you very much, they'll go all guns blazing with the marketing for that. And then with the B ones, which are the spin off films, just hold back a little bit just so people know what's what.
We'll see our episode 8 trailer for Beauty and the Beast. I'd say that's when we'll see that.
Yeah, I would think so too.
The film I'm looking forward to seeing, which is very close to release, is T2 Trainspotting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, over 20 years since the release of Trainspotting, which is one of my favourite films, to see all the guys back in action again. By all accounts, John Hodge has written an amazing script, if you believe the cast and Danny Boyle. you know, but then we've seen with the late sequels of late that unfortunately lightning doesn't strike twice. I am just hoping.
And I think Danny Boyle's going to bit off the Boyle lately as well.
Ooh, so he could do with it. Yeah, Trance wasn't great. But then he did the opening ceremony to the Olympics. You know,
yeah,
great,
yeah, but right? Steve Jobs.
I like Steve Jobs.
But then there was like 127 hours. You know?
But mind you, a lot of people looked at Steve Jobs and went, but that is more of an Aaron Sorkin film. Spelling. You know,
he's good too. He did Melrose Place, but I don't think Danny Boyle would be involved in that.
I'd watch Danny Boyle do an episode of Melrose Place.
The heck out of Danny Boyle's Melrose Place.
That would be so good. Gents, thank you so much for your company. Looking forward to more reviews as we enter into 2017. Rory and Brian, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We love movies with Gordon Hayden. Spin 103.8.